You're looking live, Sharp Money, VSiN, the Esports Betting Network. Super Bowl 60 still underway, but we do say hi. I'm Patrick Maher, of course, Mike Somich, straight off the board there at VSiN and Circa. We are live, so we welcome you. Your comments are welcomed as well. You give them, we read them. And again, you can find us. We are, of course, Sharp Money dash VSiN. It's 29-13. Listen, for a game that went to the break, 9-0, Samo, we've got a lot to discuss, specifically this fourth quarter with MVPs jumping all around, potentially the overcashing with a hold coming back. Happy Super Bowl Sunday, Mike. Welcome.
Woo! Patrick, not an exciting first half, but man, things started to get going in the second. Got a lot more fun from that front. Crazy fourth quarter. Like, it felt like this was just dead under all the way until that fourth quarter. And then we've got just the chaotic finish. Quick touchdowns for both teams to start the fourth quarter. We didn't even have a touchdown score until the fourth quarter. And now they're trying to push it to the over. Still about 30 seconds left as the Patriots trying to get in the end zone and see if they can find a way to force this game over. I'm an under better. I'm sweating right now. So we'd like to keep this under here and finish off a phenomenal day.
Yeah, there's a lot to get to with this. We won't be going play-by-play, but again, your comments here live on YouTube, Sharp Money, Mike Somich, I'm Patrick Maher. We got the Cobra producing. A couple of things. One, you mentioned it was 9-0 at the break. 3 points scored by Seattle in the third, and then we had a complete outbreak. We've had 30 points, a missed two-point conversion by the Patriots as well. So we're sitting on 42 points, this close 45.5. The big story here is he's probably going to get the MVP, and that's Kenneth Walker. Kenneth Walker, a little over 2 minutes to go, broke off a 30-plus yard run, Mike Somich, and it was called back with a hold. That would have cleared the total, obviously, of 45.5.
Yeah, that would have been the play, but it ends up coming back there. It felt like I was surprised the Patriots able to push in the end zone with the Mondre Stevenson pass. Looked like that one might hit the ground. That was a little bit of a sweat. But the big one there, yes, the hold there on Seattle, or else we would already be over this total. Patriots, a last gasp here. Doesn't look like they're going to be able to get in and force this thing over. So it looks like we're going to end up with an under and a big-time Seattle Seahawks cover.
And Mike McDonald just got drenched. It looked to be green as far as the Gatorade. That is about as live as you get here on Sharp Money and YouTube. But Super Bowl 60 champs, the Seattle Seahawks. We'll get into the game itself. If you did bet on the Gatorade, it looked like it was green to me. We've got a 29-13 finish. So, of course, Seattle does cover, Samo, and we stay under the posted total of 45.5.
Yeah, we do stay under. Seattle alts all get home. That was a big one for me, being able to play them up to 14.5. So happy we got all of that Seattle alt action home. Really interesting game. Not so much interesting early, but interesting kind of how it played out. Like, I'm not sure what we were doing from an early perspective here when you're looking at this New England offense, what they were trying to do, what the game plan was to try and come in and attack this Seahawks team. Matt Brown and I were live for the majority of the game. It made no sense they weren't forcing the football downfield. They just were choosing to kind of keep everything short, not really try and take big shots. Only one deep pass in the first three quarters. That was to Mac Hollins on kind of a scramble play. Everything else was just these little dink and dunks, and they needed big plays to try and be competitive here with this Seattle Seahawks team. And they finally got a couple of those in this fourth quarter, but it was just way too little too late.
Yeah, okay. We'll officially catch our breath, because Mike just did a great job kind of recapping what just happened. But Super Bowl 60 is in the books. We do welcome you. This is Sharp Money. We're going live on YouTube. It's VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Spread the word. That would be very much appreciated. By the way, if you are joining us live, you can go ahead and comment. If you comment, I guarantee Mike and I are going to get to your comments so you can be interactive, a part of the program. There is a lot to unpack. So those that don't know, over on VSiN Channel 158 on SiriusXM, YouTube TV, and the VSiN Watch app, Mike Somich and Matt Brown were on during the game. And it was an uneventful first half. I jumped on with the boys at 9-0 at the break, and we asked the question, what changes in the second half? Well, frankly, third quarter, nothing changed. Sacks kept coming. We'll get to the sacks, which was six. It was seven at one point with a tie of the Super Bowl record, which was taken off the board. Nothing happened in the third. And then, Mike, obviously we had an explosion here in the fourth, which then threatened the total. You and I were both on the under.
Yeah, this was wild, man. I thought I was sitting at the halftime talking about 21.5, 20.5 in the second half total. I didn't know what would change, and really nothing changed in this game until we started to see New England have to put the pedal to the metal, right? Because it was the turnovers for the Seattle defense that created shorter fields for the Seattle offense. That's how they were getting their touchdowns. New England on the other side, Drake May just started YOLOing it out there, and that's how they were having success. You know, the Mac Hollins 3-play 65-yard drive, 2 completions to him. He's just out there taking shots. I mean, he had a couple interceptions that didn't end up happening that easily could have been intercepted because he needed to make plays down the field. And you saw the flip in the Patriots game strategy. And when that flip happened, that's when the points started to rack up in that fourth quarter. And it would have been, in my mind, one of the all-time bad beats. Like levels of like Patriots New England, Falcons New England, if you had the Falcons plus 3.5 here, if this game had gone over, because we were 9-0 at half, we were 12-0 after three. This did not deserve to go over 45.5, and yet without a holding penalty, we would have cleared the total. I would have been much sadder on this broadcast, and it would have been a little bit of a bummer, but it was really New England opening up their offense that made the difference. I don't know why they didn't do that earlier. You gotta, like, they were not gonna be able to cross the street time and time again. 10 play, 12 play, 15 play drives are not New England's friend. We saw in the first half, it was negative plays. They had 7 negative plays in the first half, including 3 sacks. You're not going to be able to do that against Seattle's defense and move the football consistently. So you need big plays. You need shot plays. And to not be going for those, I thought was just a mistake right out of the gate. I don't know what Josh McDaniel was doing for 2 weeks leading up to this game, but it sure as heck wasn't game planning for this defense because that offense was pathetic in the first half.
Let's officially welcome Nick Sievers, our first commenter here on our live post-Super Bowl Sharp Money program. Nick Sievers says, under was the easiest bet ever. Let's go ahead and contextualize that for our buddy Nick. Matt asked the question, Samo asked the question, Mike did, would that be one of the worst beats of all time? We went to the fourth, 12-0, and a hold on a run from Kenneth Walker, or that was going over the 45.5. I really can't conceptualize, like Nick said, we did stay under the total, but if it went over, worst beat ever.
Ridiculous, because it didn't even look like Seattle was trying to score that many points. But again, the turnovers is what really changed this game and the style of this game, the strategy of the game in the fourth quarter. I have another like nit to pick here. I thought this was a atrociously coached football game by the New England Patriots across the board. The fact that that was your game plan on offense is awful, okay? The fact that you couldn't stop Kenneth Walker because you're missing tackles was awful. The fact that you didn't go for two when it was 19-6.
Oof.
What are we doing? If you go for two there and you miss it, 2 touchdowns still wins the game. If you go for two and you make it, you're a touchdown and a field goal and a 2-point conversion away from tying it. There is absolutely no downside and infinite upside for going for two, yet they don't do it. Just a bonehead decision there. Let's be honest. Mike McDonald should have won Coach of the Year. This was just a much better coach Seattle team. Well, and what he was able to do with his defense is just, it's next level, man.
Comments coming in, Sharp Money. Gary Renninger, 9,000. Josh knew he couldn't win. He's talking about Josh McDaniels. I wrote down in my notes, so I'm glad you brought it up, Samo. McDonald, Kubiak, greater than sign, Vrabel, McDaniels. And we could do 3 hours. A lot has been made about Vrabes, and he's done a hell of a job with the culture. But I think he got a little underwater in this one. It was going slow enough that he shouldn't have felt overwhelmed, yet he did. And you point out the 2-point conversion, not going for it there. There were other options as well that we could point out.
I'm surprised you didn't roll out Drake May more, right? Don't you want to utilize his legs? You have all these 3rd-and-2s, 3rd-and-3s, and he's just standing back there like a statue and allowing the pass rush to go after him. I got to give a hat tip to Mike McDonald, who changed tendencies and started blitzing a lot more in this game than what we had seen consistently throughout the year. He wanted to heat up Drake May, and part of his plan to not allow him to scramble was to bring extra rushers. But that makes me want to move Drake May even more because it allows him to use his legs if he's able to get outside and you are able to catch a blitz coming from the wrong side. So I don't know what the Pats were doing, man. This was one of those where maybe they thought they couldn't beat him, but you can't take that attitude going into the Super Bowl.
Mike, let's bring up one in particular. First off, they had 6 sacks for 43 yards. It was officially 6, but they called it 7. We'll get to what was determined to be an interception on the strip. But I'm thinking about that play in particular where it was a score from Nwosu. That was McDonald running circles around McDaniels as far as protection, because he brought the linebacker, he brought Witherspoon off the corner as well, and that created the turnover. McDaniels was just not prepared.
I don't think that they expected the edges to be coming as much as they did.
Correct.
We talked about this where it's like, hey, we can get home with our front four. We're going to put 7 in coverage. That's not how they ate this game. They were like, guess what? Witherspoon's coming off the edge. Guess what? It's going to be Eamon Wari coming off the edge. You've got to figure out your protections. We're going to create one-on-ones across the board. Because if we bring 5, your rookie left guard and rookie left tackle have to stand up. And you have to understand who's coming and who's not. And that was just a point of confusion for the entire game for this offensive line from the Patriots. And it's funny, Matt and I on the desk talking about this. It's 12-0. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, the turnover is coming, Matt. Like, as soon as the Patriots have to open up, the turnover is going to come from the Seattle defense. And that's what we saw. As soon as they opened up, here comes the strip sack fumble. Here comes the interception. It just, you could feel, this is how Seattle's won all year, but you could feel specifically in this game just that momentum building for the Seattle defense. And eventually, when New England is forced to get out of their turtle shell and play football, you knew those turnovers were going to start piling up. And then it's whether or not the defense takes advantage of it, whether or not the offense gets into the end zone. But you could just feel that Seattle snowball starting to roll downhill. And we've seen it from them in 6-6 games, in 6-3 games at the end of the half, where the second half, all of a sudden, that defense creates the turnover, Darnold capitalizes in the end zone, and the games are over.
Sharp Money is live. YouTube, spread the word. We appreciate it. Get your comments in. We will be reading them here on the post as far as Super Bowl 60. A couple of things. We're waiting for the MVP. You could go Jason Myers. Kenneth Walker most likely is going to get it. But let me just say this quickly. Myers broke a record as far as points. He had 17 points in this one. The kicker there for Seattle. 5 field goals, a couple extras. So most points by a kicker in Super Bowl history, which I believe you were very much in handicapping all over. That being the kickers being very busy in this one.
This was a very fun game for me, Patrick. This one went very, very, very well.
Here comes the live flex, everyone.
The kickers won. We had over 3.5 field goals. We had over 4.5 field goals. We talked about those props consistently throughout the week on Sharp Money, on VSiN. And the handicap was, these are coaches that want to kick, as we saw from both Seattle and from that extra point from New England. And there are defenses that can stop in the red zone. And that's what New England actually did very well early on in this game. They were able to get red zone stops, so this game wasn't pushed out to an insurmountable margin early. But that meant those field goals kept going up and going through. So nice to cash those field goal props. You were all over the 5.5 sacks props. That was a lot of fun. Circa had 2.5 and 3.5 sacks for Seattle specifically. That was a lot of fun. Talked about those on Ready, Set, Bet yesterday. We got the Cooper Kupp first quarter home. He goes over yardage, 14.5, all the way up to Seattle minus 14.5 cashes. The under cashes.
Yeah.
It was a nice little send-off to the NFL this year, Patrick.
And let's say this. May, who I believe had 7 completions going into the fourth, ends up with 27 completions, 43 attempts, and 295 through the air. What a skewed stat line. This fourth quarter has kind of discombobulated me as far as looking at the box, because there's a three-quarter box from Super Bowl 60, and then there's a one-quarter box. There's really, we got to analyze this completely differently.
Yeah, look, they put up 30 points in the fourth quarter. Like, what? How did this game result in 30 points in any quarter? It didn't look like we were going to get the 30 points in the game at any point of the first half or the third quarter yet. That
crazy.
The fourth quarter got drunk, Patrick. And this was part of the game script, though. If I tell you Seattle's winning by 14.5, you kind of like May passing props over. You kind of like May attempts over, because the game state in a game where it's literally like, this is it. You're just going to keep trying and trying and trying. And that's really what created the chaos in the fourth quarter, is that the Patriots are down 12 and they started to have to force things. And once they forced things, the defense was able to start getting turnovers, making plays, and this thing just absolutely opened up. To your point, like Drake May, it's a pretty faulty 295 passing. Like, let's be honest here.
Well, a couple of things. You mentioned the game got drunk in the fourth. I think America deserves some drinks after those three quarters that we witnessed. We should back it up here, Sharp Money, as we are live here on YouTube. It's Sharp Money Dash VSiN. If you'd like to spread the word for us again, you get your comments in. We are going to read them. Mike Somich, I'm Patrick Maher, Matt Deutsch producing. Couple of things. Let's back up. The first half was, and I said you and Matt were doing the Lord's work. It was you went to the break, if you're Seattle, thinking, wow, we really don't have to do much in the second half. We're not being overwhelmed with the coaching, which we mentioned, and the, how would you say, creativity offensively from Josh McDaniels. How you don't have, I don't care if it's left or right, how you don't have May continuously on the run, whether it be rolling out to find receivers or use his strength, which is his legs, is beyond me. And you had a what was it, 9-0 at the break, and it felt like it was 29-0 Seattle.
Yeah, you just there was nothing in the first half that made you feel like New England was going to be able to move the football in the second half, because again, it was all of those negative plays, the sacks, the they had multiple negative plays on run plays and passing plays. Like it you cannot have negative plays if you are New England in this game. And when that came to fruition in the first half, you knew it wasn't going to change a lot in the second half. And again, New England's points came off them opening it up, right? It wasn't like these were methodical drives that allowed them to be able to matriculate down the field. And I'm a little disappointed they didn't open it up a little bit earlier. But it, like,
what were they waiting for?
Honestly,
what are you waiting for?
I think they thought, we just need to be within one score in the fourth quarter. And so when you're sitting there and it's 9-0, you're like, that's fine. We just need to come out and we need to score a touchdown drive on the first drive of the third quarter. That was the drive I have the most issue with, Patrick. That three and out, where you could have gone for it on fourth down, where you could have moved May out of the pocket on third and two and didn't do it. That was the drive where they had to come out and be more aggressive. They had to come out and try and take that a chance to get it within one score. And to come out and be, to come out and just be so vanilla and like, we don't have any guts, we're not going to push the ball down the field, I thought was pathetic. Like, that, you had to flip the switch.
But I have to put some of it on Vrabel. Because if I'm going to kill McDaniels, there's nothing beyond the Sunday, February 8th. What are you waiting for to empty the tank? Our buddy Gary Renning said, finally, the NFL has a USC quarterback that won a Super Bowl. I will say this, Nwosu is also USC, and he ended up with the score on an interception. So we should talk about, let's frame what was happening with May. The reluctance to get him out of the pocket left him a standing duck. I mean, you had six sacks, Samo, and then the seventh, which was eventually called an interception, was May being completely overwhelmed. The ball was taken by Nwosu into the end zone there for a score.
Yeah, it was a dominant performance by the Seattle defense, by this front four, able to consistently get in the background. But like, how vanilla was this game plan? There were no trick play. There wasn't even an end around.
Nothing.
You didn't, there's no creativity. And you think about, I mean, look, I love sports movies, okay? This was like Mighty Ducks 2. And the Patriots were Team USA, and the Seahawks were Iceland. Clearly the better team, you got to pull out your cowboy guy who can bounce the puck around, and your figure skater into a triple axel. You got to find ways to be able to go out and score points in a unique way with an offense that is inferior to the defense you're playing. And to come out and be like, you know what? We're going to line it up. We're going to try and run it down your throat completely and effectively, and then we're going to leave our quarterback right where he is and just try and beat you. It's like, I could have told him that's not going to work.
And by the way, the 35-yard bomb to Hollins, they tried that in the first and just missed him. Where were the shots? McDaniels got some splaining to do. I'm very glad you brought that up, because then they finally, with 12:22 to go in the fourth, they hit on Hollins. That was there the whole entire time. Where was that?
Well, and you know what? So Drake May just falls short of winning the MVP. Number one in the NFL in EPA. Do you know why? Because he took a bunch of sacks, but he threw the deep ball incredibly well, and he scrambled. Why didn't we do those things in the first half? Like, what are we waiting for?
The more you're talking through this, the more that I realize they took everything he did better than anyone else, and they neutered him.
Yeah.
They freaking neutered him.
And I don't know. Maybe the shoulder's a bigger problem. Maybe we'll hear about that. I'm going to be honest. I don't care. You need to go out
it's
and
one
just...
game. Shoot it up, baby.
Shoot your shot, man. This may be... I don't mean to bring you down. But the Detroit Lions losing the NFC title game, that closed their window. You don't know what's going to happen next year.
Of course.
You don't know, this could be your
window. Schedule gets tougher. Schedule gets beyond tougher for New England. Mike, this was a disaster.
It was awful. I don't think people realize how bad in real time this coaching plan was heading into this football game on the New England side. It is up there in the pantheon of playoff coach choke performances with that Ravens game plan where they just ran the football into a Chiefs run defense didn't run the football against the Chiefs when their run defense wasn't good at all and lost at home. This is one of those games plans where you're going to watch the tape and you're going to be like, why did they think this would work? What made them think running into the best EPA defense on early downs was going to be successful for them?
I don't know what McDonald and the rest of Seattle did that we would laud outside of the fact that it was that bad from New England's perspective. And by the way, you had an opportunity and May had two picks and a fumble loss. So he did have the three turnovers, but a lot of that I just put on the fact that he was just completely gobsmacked and disoriented the whole entire time because they never mixed it up. Never.
And he didn't turn over till the fourth quarter. Once everything opened up and he's like, I got to YOLO this. His pick, he's just throwing it up, man. You don't even really put that on him, but you got to let him take shots. You got to let him take shots down the sidelines, not into the zone coverages that are going to be a problem in the middle of the field when you know you got too high. And just not to let him use his legs, not to allow him to do that in that first half, I thought was absolutely criminal from this offensive staff. I will say, I do like the fact that the Patriots consistently brought the blitz on Sam Darnold. And this could have been a different game if the Patriots tackled a varsity football team. There was some JV tackling out there. Sam Darnold is not a slippery quarterback. They had close to a 40% pressure rate in the first half and zero sacks. You have to get home. You have to tackle him. Kenneth Walker, he had two 20-plus yard runs where he could have lost 5 yards if they could have tackled him. The game plan on the defensive side, I actually thought was pretty good. They took JSN out of the game. They did exactly what we talked about. It's why Cooper Kupp went over his prop. It's why Barner went over his prop. They took him out of the game by double teaming JSN, blitzing and playing single everywhere else. And if they had tackled better, this would have been a closer game at half than 9-0.
There was a lot of loose tackling, specifically in that first half. And we do have, as we say hi here, we are live on YouTube. This is Sharp Money, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Mike Somich, I'm Patrick Maher. We do have breaking news as Kenneth Walker, behind 27 rushes, 135 yards for an average of 5. He had a long of 30, becomes the first running back since Terrell Davis to capture the MVP. So fascinating in the sense that the one prop that kept on dropping like a rock from a 78.5 opener on rushing yards for Kenneth Walker got all the way down to 71-ish. You could tell me where it settled, but Walker obviously goes well over. But here's the thing, it was tenuous, specifically in that first half, where a 5-yard loss turns into a 15-yard gain because of the tackling that we mentioned.
It was the big plays from Kenneth Walker. And it's a defense on the New England side that just hadn't allowed those. They were able to consistently bottle up running backs where, okay, maybe you can get yards, but you're going to get 2 or 3 yards at a time. And if you're willing to bang your head against that wall, yeah, you can get to 70, but you're going to have to carry it 25 times to be able to get up to that type of number. The big shot plays, the chunk plays, that is what really allowed Walker to be able to have this game. And it's interesting, you mentioned it, open 79.5. There was a 69.5 in market today.
Wow.
In Vegas. It closed 70.5 in most places. That flies over. You know how much money was bet on this Kenneth Walker under prop, Patrick? I looked over at Derek Stevens, who owns Circa Casino and Resort. He stood up and cheered after the 30-yarder. He was actually up and cheering because Kenneth Walker busted one for 30. So they had a ton of liability to that Walker under, and he ends up with your MVP. Congrats to the big guy, Dustin Sweetelson. 8.5-1, he had a big Kenneth Walker MVP ticket. I never would have seen that coming. To me, this is a game state that would not favor Kenneth Walker, but because of the way this kind of played out and because of those big runs, he's able to go over his total, fly over it, and end up winning the MVP without scoring a touchdown. I'd like, how often do you have a running back
not
MVP
often.
Without a touchdown in the Super Bowl?
By the way, get your winning plays in the chat as well. We're going to give you props. Amich deserves them as well. The diversion or ancillary targets for Cup came through. I can't remember what you ended up betting on Cup. You can refresh, but he goes 6 receptions, 61, and a long of 23.
Yeah, we had Cooper Cup first quarter over a yard and a half. He had a 23-yarder in the first quarter, over 33.5, and alts up to 50 on Cooper Cup. And again, the whole argument here is this is a Patriots team that we saw in their heyday, Bill Belichick. What is his number one thing on defense? You take away the number one option from the other team. That was clearly JSN. They committed resources all game to take away JSN. That meant it was going to be Cooper Cup, who was going to get a lot of targets here. And I would be willing to bet 12 targets, which is what Cooper Kupp got in this game, is the most he's gotten all season. They just had to throw to him because of the coverage, how it played. And so he was able to absolutely eat in this game and get the Seahawks team going on specific drives. So Kupp, huge game for him. JSN, you don't want to see him in and out. Like, it was a bummer to see the ankle and then the concussion. He had one opportunity in the first quarter where Darnold just missed him on an 86-yard touchdown pass when he broke behind the defense on a blitz after Darnold was able to escape. That would have put him over every number from a prop perspective in the first quarter. Instead, he ends up 4 for 26 here. And just a really inefficient night for JSN as he had 10 targets but only 4 catches.
Yeah, I would say the dark side, which is what they call the defense now, kind of overwhelmed a bad offensive game plan from New England here. Let's focus on Darnold, who, 28 years old, fifth team, had been labeled a bust. I would put his performance as shaky. He did seem nervous at times. There were a couple of plays, I'm thinking, one in particular, Cup, that he missed. I'm thinking of another one where he had him and he literally just missed him. A couple of nice throws. But I would say he was somewhere exactly what we explained coming into the game. He could play okay. And they could win by doubles. They could win by margin. And that's literally what happened here.
I would say, like, if you grade him out based on the entire
season. Above average.
This was about a 5 or 6 out of 10 for Darnold.
Average.
But you know what is a 10 out of 10? He led the NFL in turnovers. He had 0 today. That was the one thing that Darnold had to go out and do. And you the sack that he took, he immediately covered it with two hands. He knew it was coming. He accepted the sack instead of trying to do something he shouldn't. The passes that he threw were not turnover-worthy passes. The closest he came to getting intercepted was actually a ball that hit off JSN's hands where JSN probably should have caught it. So you don't have turnover-worthy plays. You take the sack and get off the field and let your defense do the thing. That's as important as he needed to be. I don't love the term game manager. He needed to be a game manager here because he knew how big the advantage was on the other side of the ball with that Seahawks defense taking on the Patriots offense.
I'm having a hard time kind of discerning what this Super Bowl was for three quarters and then into the fourth. I would say for three quarters, the Patriots' performance, both on the field and then coaching, maybe the worst I've ever seen in a Super Bowl. And then things just got weird and wonky in the fourth. Do you see my point? It's almost hard to distill. As far as preparation, you're not going to find a shakier game plan coming into it than what we saw from the Patriots for three quarters here.
I mean, that was my main takeaway. I just really disappointed in the Patriots offense. And I realize they were at a disadvantage. But when you're at a disadvantage, you got to find ways to try and create chaos. And you got to try and find ways to confuse defenses. And you play into your strengths. And the fact that they didn't play into their strengths for those first three quarters, that they didn't take shots down the sideline, that they didn't roll out Drake May, that they didn't try and create situations where, you know, Seattle's blitzing. They were blitzing on almost every third down. Why isn't Travion Henderson getting a screen pass? Why aren't we trying to play into, like, let's try and trick them. Let's catch them in something they're not expecting. The decision to not do that, it's really hard for me because if you talked about which coaching staff has the advantage coming into this game, you have to think the preparation side was advantage Patriots. It's Vrabel, who's been to a ton of Super Bowls. This is Josh McDaniels, what, 9th, 10th Super Bowl? To be this ill-prepared heading into the game, I thought was shocking.
No, it's a good point. And by the way, the Henderson touches, you could tell he was getting confidence in the second half. And the explosive difference, the explosiveness, the difference is palpable. You're watching, and you could see Stevenson and Henderson, and it's like, where was Henderson? Where were the looks? John Massey writes in here, Sharp Money Live after Super Bowl 60. Seattle brought more than four early in the game, rattled the Patriots. Oh, May looking over his shoulder during the play. What John says is correct. It's just the diversity, how they're able to get pressure because they're bringing four early, and then all of a sudden they bring a linebacker and Witherspoon late that turns into a touchdown going the other way.
Yeah, that's I love Seattle's defensive game plan. I love what Mike McDonald does. Like I could gush about him for 3 hours. Like the fact that every week he changes the game plan defensively against specifically to tailor it to the team that they are playing, and what he did in these 2 weeks. He broke tendency on the defensive side. The 3rd and 9 on the first drive that the Patriots had, where Witherspoon comes from off the edge from 10 yards deep, they never do that. They never blitz a cornerback from off the line of scrimmage. If they're going to blitz, they always come up. That confused the Patriots' offensive line. That got Drake May on the move. Like, what they were able to do from a tendency-breaking perspective with how they brought the blitz, when they were rushing for, what offensive linemen they were specifically attacking was a thing of beauty to be able to watch. And then, to John's point, you could tell Drake May got to a point where he's like, all right, I got to play backyard football. I'm taking shots. I'm taking chances. I'm doing everything I can. But that brought in the variance. And then when you have so much talent on the defensive side, that's going to bring out the turnovers.
It's like John, to John's point. Good job, John. You get your comments in. It's like when you're bringing four early and it's working, then all of a sudden, when they brought the corner blitz, it feels like 15 guys coming at a 23-year-old kid in his second year. And that's what it was. He was seeing ghosts. We talk about Darnold seeing ghosts. He was seeing the, you know, shadows of Seahawk defenders when he's in the pocket there. And he did everything he could. 100% agree with what you said. I would have liked to seen May not stationary in the pocket. I would like to see him out either way.
Well, let's talk about Sam Darnold. And just like the trip that he took to be able to get here, they knock off the Rams in an NFC title game where he plays out of his mind. That was the Rams team that kicked him out of Minnesota in the playoffs last year. Comes into this Super Bowl matchup, taking on the New England Patriots, the team he saw ghosts against when he was on the Jets. To be able to beat those two teams and be able to lift the Lombardi Trophy, it's a very poetic incredible ending to this season. And now it's like you think back to Justin Jefferson's comments about a week ago where he said, yeah, we probably would have been better had we kept Sam Darnold. I think Seattle's probably going to keep Sam Darnold here and run this team back because they are going to be just as good, if not better, again next year, Patrick.
Seattle picks up their second world championship, of course, second Lombardi, behind a menacing and ornery defense. I'll say this, Darnold completed 50% of his passes. He was 19 of 38, 5.3 on yards per attempt. He had the touchdown, but the most important thing here behind 202 yards is, did he drop one? He did not. And did he throw one? You know, I'm thinking, and I can give you the exact time, where all of a sudden New England is quote-unquote in it there in the fourth. And May, who's 23, he did throw a bad pick to a center fielder, and that was kind of it, right? You didn't have that mistake from Darnold. So redemption, vindication for a guy that had been labeled a bust.
And to deliver in big moments. I mean, we even had questions about Sam Darnold heading into this season. And then you had the Rams performance where he threw four picks and the questions resurfaced. You had the first three quarters of the second game against the Rams. And it was, are we going to just play this script over and over again with Sam Darnold where he's good until it absolutely matters? He was awesome against San Francisco. He was awesome against the Rams. He was good in this game. And he had the defense to be able to back it up. And now Sam Darnold is a Super Bowl champion.
Yeah, but you're right. But it's almost like waiting for the shoe to drop. He was not only good against the Rams, he was exquisite on third downs. A couple of big plays when it mattered today. But again, if you're just joining, I'm sure you saw it. Kenneth Walker is your MVP, your first running back to capture an MVP in the Super Bowl since Terrell Davis. And it just got working early with him where you could tell that Walker was gaining confidence, like, oh, I thought that was going to be a 5-yard loss. And then he got the sideline where he danced for 15 extra yards. And the tackling was just abhorrent. No, that, like, bad.
That was another one. Because I'm like, again, Matt and I on live on VSiN during the time. I'm like, Sam Darnold's not slippery. He shouldn't be able to okadoke a linebacker to get an extra 9 yards. And it's just, right, that was consistent with the tackling from New England. Like, they were every single time we saw a play from Seattle, it felt like they were getting the extra 3, 4, 5 yards. Every time we saw the Seattle defense, they were stopping those 3, 4, 5 yards plays, where just stopping them in the tracks for zero. And that matters over the course of a game. Those yards absolutely add up. And to think that Sam Darnold was going to have a 12-yard run in this game, I mean, it looked like he was going to get pasted 4 yards down the line, down the field, and he was able to just kind of shimmy right through and keep it going.
Our buddy Nick, Darnold isn't a top 10 quarterback, but he didn't need to be. He's good. The team is great. Well put. Had a friend over asking me what makes the Seattle defense great. And I just said all three levels. I mean, it is so competent at every single level. And then you throw in, I mean, we do have a man crush on McDonald, but the deeper you dig into schematically what he does, I mean, they're stopping the run in nickel packages. Like, they do everything modern day wise, they do it perfectly on defense.
He was the defensive coordinator for the Baltimore Ravens 3 years ago. That was a top three defense. Been a train wreck since he left. He took over a defense that was around 20th. They have been top five over the last 2 years in the second best defense all season this year. That's the dude who is topping it, who's heading it, who is able to make these moves. You look at the players on this roster. Guys like Kobe Bryant that was cut, that was traded. Like, these are throwaways from other teams that are playing key roles for this team because of the strategic attitude from Mike McDonald and how he is able to figure out the weak spots, the weak points in all of these offenses and attack them with speed and with talent. And it's such a phenomenal job. I could not be happier to see someone where I'm a guy who's like, hire the offensive coach. There are rare cases where a defensive coordinator is transcendent, doing something new, doing something different, able to game plan week in and week out. There's maybe two of them in the NFL right now. Mike McDonald, one of those guys. I'm happy he was able to get it done.
We are getting our buddy Matt Deutsch, who's producing a lot, joining late here. Super Bowl 60 has wrapped. We welcome you. Sharp Money, we're live. Post-Super Bowl 60, 29-13, Seattle with the winner. Mike Somich, I'm Patrick Maher. Of course, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. If you get your comment in, maybe you just want to flex a little bit about a bet that you won. Here's an example. Our buddy Ran, 274. Cooper Kupp receiving prop, easiest bet. That Rashid Rush bet got crushed the bad way. He's 100% right. You got the one attempt. You're hoping at 5, 5.5. You're hoping at least get an attempt. He did. It goes for -5.
Yeah, you knew he was get the rush. The question was the yardage, right? And that's
could he
where
get
like,
it?
You're like, can I get carries? Can I get carries over a half instead of yardage over 3.5, right? But the number there, just a -5-yard run for Rashid Shaheed, not able to get positive yardage on it. I kind of hate that play, by the way. Can we just run like an under center end around if we're going to run Shaheed?
Right.
Instead of like this like fake to Walker, Darnold turns around, flips it 2 yards backwards, so he's like 8 yards behind the line of scrimmage when he gets the football.
Yeah.
Like I don't love that play, but but the Kupp one, man, that's just when it all comes together. When you understand what the defensive structure is going to be against the team, and you know exactly who's going to benefit. That was Cooper Kupp today with the defense that New England played.
Yeah, my personal three biggest bets were your first half under 21.5, yet full game under, which we got lucky with the Kenneth Walker hold on that run. I don't know what happened in the fourth quarter. And then I went with Mike with the 4.5, but I also laddered that where I laid plenty with Seattle. And that's kind of the script. You know, I came on with you and Matt Brown, and I said, I think the verbiage was that was a remarkably scriptable first half where you had a team in the Patriots. It felt like this was a team that was ahead of schedule in the first half. Yeah, we expect this team a year from now, 2 years from now, and just on paper, whether it be man for man, coaching, whatever it is, Seattle, just the better team, and the first half played out perfectly like that.
It did.
On script.
And you saw that, again, the Seattle defense was as dominant as we thought. I think the strength of schedule questions all got answered. It was ridiculous. We talked about this on Sharp Money. Every single head coach that the Patriots played was fired. Unless they played an NFC South team or the Jets. It felt like that was the team that was out there on the field trying to play against the Seattle Seahawks team. They danced through some raindrops to get here. And you can't take that away from New England. They can only beat who's in front of them. But at the same time, this is the first time they played a team that's got an offense and a defense that are both top 15 in the NFL. And this is a Seattle Seahawks team that's had to deal with the best division in the NFL, in the NFC West,
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like, and had to beat San Francisco multiple times, the Rams twice to get to this point. I joked about it right before the game kicked off. The Super Bowl was 2 weeks ago. This is just the other game that's playing, because the Rams would have won this football game too. They would have blown the doors off the Patriots as well. It was just a fortunate scenario where the Patriots able to get here, and an honestly atrocious coaching job once they got here, because
terrible.
Didn't even have a chance.
Let's note some notables. One, the 6 sacks by Seattle in Super Bowl 60, one off tying the record of 7, which at one point before it was ruled there an interception, they had tied it at 7 sacks. Felt like they left a couple of sacks out on the field. And then Josh Myers, he along with Walker was making a case for MVP. He had a record 17 points, of course, the 5 field goals, most points by a kicker in Super Bowl history. New wave net marketer for you. Thank you. That's a mouthful. You guys had some great insights on the game, had some good plays. Thanks to you both. Any updates on Derby horses this weekend? New wave net marketer, tremendous. I'll write that down to talk about what happened at Tampa Bay Downs before we get out of here. Wait for that. But yeah, it was fun. Sharp money kind of getting into this game. What I started to respect about the matchup was how New England and Seattle got here. What John Schneider did, which is maybe the brilliant job by a general manager, building from the floor, moving on from Pete Carroll after 8 wins, who was a legend, bringing in an unknown, and then just hitting the draft, trading away Russell Wilson, accruing picks, trading away Geno, accruing picks and using those picks sagely. And then the Patriots went 11 for 11 in this year's draft, where they had useful players. Both teams, while underwhelming in the Super Bowl, I will agree, were brilliantly built to be here this year in 2026.
Yeah, the front office in Seattle has just done a tremendous job over the last 2 or 3 years. The decision to sign Darnold, get rid of Geno Smith and bring in Darnold. I mean,
it was a jump ball. That was a jump ball at the time.
I didn't think it was a slam dunk. I wasn't sitting there saying, great move. You know, it was a risk, and the risk absolutely paid off for them. But you look at some of the dominance you have, like Byron Murphy, who's homegrown, Witherspoon, Woolen, the three offensive linemen.
Emenwari.
Like, this is a team that was built around the draft on both sides of the football, and it was able to find the right window by adding a quarterback, which is by far one of the most difficult things to do. Think about, when was the last time we had a free agent quarterback win the Super Bowl there next year? I mean, it's been a minute. I can tell you that much, because you go back through the last few Super Bowl winners, maybe Tom Brady in Tampa. Maybe, I think that's probably the last one, but he's a legend. He's not Sam Darnold. You don't have a Sam Darnold-esque quarterback go to a new team as a free agent and win
the
Super Bowl.
No, but the reason I'm saying jump ball is when they moved on from Geno, who was very consistent to 10 wins last year for McDonald as a rookie. That was dubious. And then signing Darnold, remember, wasn't a slam dunk, played horribly against the Lions to close out the regular season, played horribly against the Rams. They make a move and they win a Super Bowl. Fata 80, Super Bowl 61 will be at SoFi Stadium on Valentine's Day, February 14th, 2027. He said the last Super Bowl was at SoFi Stadium. The LA Rams won the championship. Well, that was actually the last time we had one at SoFi was Patriots Rams, where the Pats won 13-3 in a snoozer, which this was tracking to be perfectly symmetrical to what we saw with the Patriots in 2019 and the Rams. And then the fourth quarter happened, which was this game on tequila.
I did not realize next year's Super Bowl is on Valentine's Day. I mean,
what says love? What says love more than...
do we bet the Packers now? Is Jordan Love giving the MVP on Valentine's Day?
Fellas, come up with the excuses now.
I mean, that's the NFL is really pushing it now. They're like, we're going to take Christmas Day from the NBA.
Christmas, Thanksgiving.
We're taking Valentine's Day from the ladies. That's our day now, too. We're taking that one back. Oh, man. I did not really. That is going to cause some problems in my household. I'm not going to lie.
Roger, do you think Roger Goodell cares about your relationship? He does
no,
not.
No, that's why there's Friday games, Monday games, Thursday games.
Rand 274 brings up a great point, which I neglected to mention. Thank you, Rand. Drake May, 37 rush yards, 5 carries. So again, this is what's beautiful about this. when we did sharp money, as soon as those championship games wrapped, it was right around 30. It got all the way up to, did we touch 40?
38 and a half was your high.
And he finishes with 37.
Numbers matter, folks. And it was funny because today was 35 and a half. So we saw the 28 and a half get pushed up to 38 and a half, came back down to 35 and a half or so. It's all about when you bet it. If you got the worst 100%. And you took the over, it was a loss. If you got any of those numbers kind of below that, the 35 and a half, 28 and a half, it was even 32, 33 and a half early last week, all of those end up going over. And we talked about this right on that Sunday show. You got to bet those over props if you like them early. We saw steam specifically on that one. The funny part, the other steam prop was the Kenneth Walker under, and that one got absolutely destroyed because everyone was on that early, and that one flies over the total.
Let's bring in what Rand is saying as well. By the way, just want to mention, and we'll get to Hunter Henry, Rand. Good job. Want to mention that this was, and you can get it $60 off. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe to get through March Madness and become a pro. Use the promo code SHARP. I know a lot of people that we respect were on the Patriots in this matchup. And I go into a matchup like Seattle and New England building a case for the dog. You and I, every time we popped on, whether it was Mad Dog Sports Radio or Sharp Money, we just kept on becoming more convinced that Seattle was the right side. Now, we get a little dubious when, you know, every broadcaster and everybody's saying Seattle, Seattle, Seattle. Sometimes you got to stay in your vacuum and not be affected by trying to go contrarian because you see everybody lining up favorite. That this was very much a Seattle Super Bowl to win, and the latter worked out as well.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's interesting because you kind of want to be contrarian. You said it, right? You kind of want
to
be the
guy
that's
you're looking
going
to build that
the
case.
Grain.
Yes.
But the thing is like the people that I respect that I talked to about New England, I didn't agree with their arguments. And that's like sometimes you hear it and you hear people you respect. You're like, no, that argument is very logical. But the idea that like this New England defense is wildly improved because of the playoff games and they're only giving up 8 points a game. It's like, yeah, dude, but there was reasons. They played offenses that were atrocious in the playoffs. This Seattle offense is exponentially better than any offense that they face going into the playoffs. So that one to me is an immediate like cross it off the list. Not something I'm overly worried about. And like you heard like, well, the schedule's not that important. They're going to hear all week that they're underdogs. You get on the field, man. You look at the matchups. Everything was Seattle in this game. The two weaknesses for Seattle were the tight end, and Hunter Henry did not have a good game. He goes 3 for 31 in this spot. All late. Like, none of it happened early. And, like, the other thing everyone said is, well, New England's going to stop the run. And I thought New England would stop the run. But they did not. They did not stop the run. And when one of your two advantages goes poorly, you end up losing by doubles.
I mentioned it was an impossibly rational first half where it's 9-0. Seattle probably left something out there as far as 9-0. I think New England was fortunate at the break to be down 9-0. I thought there were points left out there by Seattle. I thought there were sacks left out there by Seattle. And you brought it up, and I want to give you credit. Specifically in the first half, Vrabel is a tackling guy. That was some of the worst tackling you're going to see from a team in a Super Bowl by New England in the first half.
Yeah, I don't. It's so tackling's usually effort, and you have to think of efforts at full force. It's hard to explain why the tackling was so poor. But it was a really really bad tackling game for this New England football team. They were allowing Kenneth, like the Kenneth Walker runs really stood out to me on that second drive where Seattle goes out and gets a field goal. The 30-yarder, he should have lost 5 yards. And then the 23-yarder, he's bouncing it back outside. He should have probably been tackled for like 2, and then all of a sudden he's 20 yards down the field. Like, those are the mistakes you absolutely can't make in these Super Bowls, especially as an underdog, and especially when you're trying to work through everything. So I'm kind of bummed we got this performance from New England. I would have been fun if they just came out and said, screw it, we're slinging it. Let's see what happens. Let's see if we can get a lead. Because if you get a lead, you can play like this.
Let's react to a couple of comments. And again, before we get out of here, if you want to throw your comments in on the live chat, I'll get them in. Our buddy John Massey says it's really hard to hold your nerve over 2 weeks with the noise. And that is something that we try to just absolutely talk about nonstop, where when you have 2 weeks to prepare for something that's a standalone like the Super Bowl, you find yourself. I think you had a buddy that turned around and he said, I got 12 bets and we still have 7 days to go here. You have to be careful with the noise. And then Rand said the NFC was so far ahead of the AFC back in October. It was so obvious.
Yeah, well, two things. First off, the hold your nerve. This is so usually I listen to 20 hours of content across a bunch of different providers during every NFL week. I don't listen to any content, much content, I should say, because I want my own opinion to really be my own by the Super Bowl, because I really have developed a feeling for both of these teams. And so for me, heading into the Super Bowl, that's one of the weeks where I am not over engaging in the props and everything, because I want to make sure that my opinion shines through. It's something in horse racing that happens a lot. You get talked off horses, you get talked off props. For me, I want to make sure when I have a big opinion, I'm going to listen to other things. I'm going to take in that information from people that I trust and that I want to hear from. But it's not going to sway me, because in this specific spot, I have so much data on these teams. I'm going to roll with what I really believe. As far as the NFC and the AFC, you know, it feels like if this was Jacksonville, if this was Buffalo, this is a different game. But because of what happened against Denver and because you saw Bo Nix come out and it was the Patriots, it just doesn't feel like we got the best AFC team in the Super Bowl. And the fact that you didn't have Mahomes, you didn't have Lamar Jackson, you didn't have Burrow, you didn't have the elite quarterbacks that were in the AFC side this year of the playoffs, it just felt inevitable that that NFC title game was going to be the Super Bowl game. And I was texting with a friend who's a big Bears fan. He's like, how many of the NFC teams would you made favorite over the Pats? Like, Carolina would have been the only dog. San Francisco would have been a pick. Everyone else would have been, the Bears would have been a favorite over the Pats in my numbers.
Let's do this for Darnold because he deserves it. Label the bus. He's 28 years old. This is his fifth team. Let's go to 2018, the draft. One overall, Baker Mayfield. Two overall, Saquon. He got his last year. Three overall, Sam Darnold. All right, it's important. Seven overall was Josh Allen. This is 2018. 10 overall was Josh Rosen. We keep going until you get to then 32 overall, Lamar Jackson. If I told you in 2026 that we'd be sitting here and a dude that was picked up off the scrap heap, and you just mentioned Carolina, and just being shuffled, would now play well. First off, his game against the Rams was exquisite. That's kind of his Super Bowl. But play well enough and win a Super Bowl after being labeled a bust. I mean, this is why we get into it, right? This is why we love sports.
What would the number have been for, like, first quarterback from the 2018 draft class to win a Super Bowl in 2021? What would that Sam Darnold number been?
Dude.
Because they're like Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, we're talking about MVPs.
Yes.
And then Baker, who's like, he's been cooking in certain seasons too. Like, Rosen would be around the same price as Darnold, like at that point. Like, and it's crazy to think that Darnold got here and was able to win a Super Bowl.
It really is. Let's put a bow on it. It was, again, it's a tale of three quarters and then the fourth, whatever the hell that was, really. I do feel if you were somebody like me that was on the under completions for, if you told me at seven completions going into the fourth that I was going to sweat, not only sweat, but lose by a mile my Drake May completions, that was wild. But, you know, three quarters and then the fourth, quickly, guys, I'm a longtime Patriots fan. Here's our buddy New Wave. I saw this beating coming a long time ago. I bet Seahawks futures market the first game after the 49ers game. Josh Allen would have made for an exciting Super Bowl. Yeah, I mean, listen, when I went on with you and Matt, my point was I did expect the Patriots potentially next year or the following year, but this was on script at the break that it's not, they're not on the same level as the Seattle team this year.
No, they're 1 or 2 years away. Like Stephon Diggs and Matt Collins are your 1-2 at wide receiver.
Yeah.
Like it's not good.
Collins
enough.
A legit cast off.
It's not good enough, right? And it, like, you look at the defensive side, it's like Christian Gonzalez, okay. But you, like, got Spillane in the middle. Look, man, he's kind of slow. Like, he's good at the run stop, but he's kind of slow. You don't have a true edge pass rusher. Like, there are, and New England will have the cap room to be able to address some of this in the offseason.
Tremendous.
With Drake May on a rookie deal, they are going to be able to get better. but they've got to find their way. They've got to sign on everything, and then we'll see what happens with them moving forward, because this is a team that should be here for the next couple of years. Drake May should improve. This offensive line should get better. You fix the left side of the line. You move your number one pick into from tackle to guard in the offseason. You go out, you get a left tackle, either via the draft, via free agency, and all of a sudden, this team's a lot better next year. They weren't supposed to be here. This was schedule-aided, teams that they played, and they got here early. Good job. It's not their fault they played who they played. But this was pretty foreseeable.
By the way, I think both the Patriots and Seahawks are going to go into this offseason top seven as far as spending flexibility. You're looking at a team like the Cowboys, who are a net negative when it comes to spending flexibility. Both the Seahawks and Patriots are in an awesome position to improve. First off, they paid Darnold. They didn't pay him a fortune. You still have Drake May on the rook. These teams are going to get better, and that is what we're talking about with the Patriots. They just weren't supposed to be here, so be proud if you're a Patriots fan. They should be better next year.
They should be, and that to me is like, it's why this was kind of, you could kind of see it coming. It's why we were on Seattle Alts. It's because, like, look, this is, I get that people want to make a case for the dog in the Super Bowl. Sometimes you gotta take the favorite, and I understand it was square to take the favorite, right? But I like money more than I like being sharp. Give me the cash.
as Cosmic Charlie says in the chat, all the sharps on the Patriots. Ha ha. Ha ha. Don't know if all of them were, but sharp money was certainly on Seattle. And also, it gets to a point, and you know this better than anyone, Mike, where when you find yourself on the favorite team like Seattle, people are kind of sideways at you. Like, okay. It's like, no. I have plenty of data at this point, and I didn't need to see much more than what I saw against the Rams to know that, yes, the schedule is a factor with New England, and Seattle's a better football team.
I mean,
know what to say. I thought the 4.5 was short.
Talked on Thursday. I had this game at 5.75 for Seattle. Rarely am I off 1.5 on the closing total in Super Bowl, but it felt like people trying to make reasons to believe in New England versus give me actual cognitive arguments as to why they're going to be able to come out and be great. And honestly, they probably could have had a shot in this game had the coaching plan been better. The game plan was atrocious.
Great point, Mike. Great point. You've been on the air for a very long time, so I'm going to let you go. We will have more sharp money. So first off, let's just say this. Thank you to everybody that has been so supportive. It would mean a ton to us. Spread the word. You can find sharp money in the podcast, but also subscribe to the YouTube. We're very appreciative, and we're going to keep going. And a question that came up, I think we deserve to deliver it. Anything that people need to know, VSiN Live, as far as the Derby trail coming out of the weekend that got swallowed up by the Super Bowl here?
Yeah, well, I mean, we'll start in the Tampa Bay Derby, the one that I was really looking forward to the most because I was excited to see who would run well because of the horses that had run second to those horses. I thought the Renegade ran very well. Paladin beat Renegade last time out. So that is a plus for Paladin. Paladin will be back at Fairgrounds this week. He's currently your favorite in the Derby market, so we'll see how he's able to do. I think the Puma got a brutal trip. Some people are like justifying it that the Puma's trip in Tampa Bay Derby wasn't bad. It was awful. He had horse around the turn, and he did not get to open up until it was way too late. The race was already over. So I think the Puma is still a legitimate threat, legitimate contender, despite yet to break his maiden. I'll be interested to see what his price is coming back next time. The California race was basically a throwaway.
Yeah.
Because Desert Gate didn't break, and that completely changed. Then Intrepido found himself on the lead. That completely changed how that race was going to play out. I thought the 7, can't remember his name off the top of my head right now, had a really rough trip. But he's by a horse in Practical Joke that kind of struggles getting over a mile, and that was a mile race. So like mile and 16th, mile and a quarter, not really interested moving forward. So to me, the California race, I think Intrepido's still the best horse in that race, just kind of got up against it with the style he was forced to run because of the break from Desert Gate. Renegade, legit threat to be able to hit the board in the Kentucky Derby. The Puma, one I want to keep my eye on.
You're getting props. Mike hit a 20-1 on Friday Southwest Stakes. Is that true?
That is true. Well, it went off at 12-1. 20-1 morning line. Gave it out on VSiN at the track on our Thursday show. Went off 12-1 on Friday. Able to get that horse home. So that was great to have that one. It just, the brace set up for a horse to close. Silent Tactic, that horse's name for Mark Cassie. Another player in the super in my mind, because if we do have a hot pace, that's a horse that's going to enjoy the distance, going to want to come running late.
And then one more, our buddy ran. I needed one more Travion Henderson reception, and he disappeared. He did not. That kind of finishes the theme. Travion was live. McDaniels decided, we don't have Travion until the second half. That is the exact type of player that Mike was kind of pointing out. If you're trying to mix it up, which is what they should have been doing in the first half, you use Travion Henderson. McDaniels did not.
Yeah, I was shocked. I mean, this, you look at the usage at the end of the game, you're like, oh, it's about like 6-7 in carries. Like, so Henderson one less carry than Ramondre Stevenson. I don't know why we didn't have Henderson get more carries in the first half. I don't know why we weren't running screen passes when you knew it was predictable blitzes coming on third down from Seattle. You need big plays. We've talked about this for a week and a half, that New England had to live off big plays in this game. And the idea that, look, Ramondre Stevenson, great when you're in a snow globe with an offense on the other side that can't do jack
Denver.
Squat.
Yep.
Travion Henderson, much better when you're going to get few opportunities to crease a run and take it to the house. He's the one you want with the football, not Stevenson. Same when you're catching a pass. He's the one you want with the football. You need your big plays from your players that can create them. And having a guy that can't create big plays on the field when you need them is a waste of a touch.
All right. Well, thank you, Mike. You can find, if you want more of the horse racing, VSiN at the Track, wherever you find your podcast with Samo and our buddy Salty Halty, Aaron Halterman. Matt Deutsch, thank you for a long football season and all your help with this. Don't forget the daily newsletter, which is free. Bill did a great job leading up to the Super Bowl. Go to VSiN.com/newsletter. You'll have more information about Sharp Money, airtime, air dates. And remember, you want March Madness, you want to bet it. Nobody does it better than VSiN. We'll have our college basketball March Madness betting guide. You can get everything right now and save $60. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe. Use the promo code SHARP. Samo, tremendous job from you. All kidding aside, as far as the Super Bowl and profits made, you get the last word. What do you got, my friend?
I'm going to go celebrate. I'm gonna go get a steak at Barry's and drink some tequila, Patrick. We're gonna go.
You deserve it.
Great Super Bowl. We are gonna go have some fun with that money we just won.
I'm jealous. I wish I was with you. Who are you gonna be imbibing with?
Matt Brown and I. We both had Seahawks alts. We both like it. It was both on the under. It was a very good Super Bowl for us. So we're gonna go grab some steaks. He's probably gonna order like an $800 bottle of wine that I'm gonna tell him he has to pay for because I don't want any of it, and then we'll move along.
It's good, and you can see the boys, Matt Brown and Mike Samich, did a great job. Ready, Set, Bet on Saturdays and Sundays, and as well as the contest show. From all of us here at Sharp Money, first off, thank you for all your participation. Like, subscribe, please spread the word. We'll see you soon.